And welcome to a brand new episode of the Inside the Ropes podcast. That's correct. It's not the SmackDown Summer anymore. That's old hat. It's now Inside the Ropes, where we talk about a plethora, a smorgasbord of wrestling items that have come across our desk, but not in a dirty way. My name's Kenny, and I'm joined by Sondra. Hi, Sondra. How are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing all right. Now, I didn't think of coming across the desk in a dirty way, but now that I have, now that image is in my head. So thanks for that on this lovely Wednesday afternoon.
True. But I mean, if it was me, I was going to say, if it was me over a desk, you'd need to get somebody else involved for me to be able to make that happen. No offense to you.
Yeah. Well, I understand. It's fine. I just don't have what you're looking for.
No. And then also, I'd need to make you cut your hair, and you don't want to cut your hair, so.
No, not thing. At all. It's. I think the moral of the story is that you and I are just never going to date.
I mean, we could date. We just wouldn't ever be physical.
No, it would be a completely non-sexual situation.
I think we'd have a great date.
We probably, well, I mean, we hang out and we have fun.
Yeah, so, you know.
It would be really no different to that.
Yeah. Anyway, so welcome everybody to the show.
This has escalated.
February 13th, today is, did you know, I saw this before we came on the air, that today, 2 years ago today, was the Festival of Friendship.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize that. I forgot that that happened right before Valentine's Day. That's interesting.
So, classic
I don't really
segment.
Do Valentine's Day, so I guess like sometimes I forget about it because I was clever because I've always hated Valentine's Day. Like even when I'm dating people, I just think it's kind of a dumb holiday. So when I got married, I ended up getting married on February 19. So I have an out, right? Because I'm just like, oh, I can just celebrate my marriage anniversary and, you know, not have to deal with Valentine's Day. And then I don't have to do anything for it. It's kind of nice.
See, my whole thing with February the 14th is that, so anybody who knows me knows that sentiment and soppiness just makes me feel sick. So
accurate.
The idea of having to do it like in an environment where everything's like, oh, here's like roses and candles and all that, I'm just like, see, I tell you what real love should be. If I am drunk, I come home, I'm sick, I eat chips and cheese, and I ask you to rub my belly and you don't judge me.
Yeah. No, accurate.
Anyway.
I mean, I'm the girl that, like, you know, when I got proposed to in front of a Superman statue, and, like, his friends were like, oh, you should take her in a carriage, and you should get her flowers, and he was like, she would hate all of that, and that's true.
It's funny because, so, you know, as we're recording this, Steve Gunn is on a train right now as he's listening to this, coming up to Glasgow, and it's February the 14th, so I'm just saying this to you on the air, break the fourth wall. This isn't Valentine's Day! It's February the 14th! Just so he's aware when he arrives how things are going to go. I don't want.
I mean,
to...
he should know you well enough to know by now that
know,
sentiment then, and romance and mushy stuff is just not your thing.
But then people are starting to make me doubt myself because people are like, you know, he's terrified of you. I was like, what do you mean? And they were like, he's terrified that you're not into him. And I was like, we've been a long distance for 6 months. What else do I need to do? he co-parents my fucking dog from afar. No fucking child support. So, you know, I'm doing everything I need to do, motherfuckers. Anyway, point was, can't remember what the point was, Festival of Friendship.
Festival of Friendship.
Day before Valentine's Day. Great segment, though. I think it is, like in 10 years, when they're doing, like, you know, Raw 50 or whatever. Not Raw 50. They'll have some sort of anniversary show of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
I think Festival of Friendship would be in it. I think it's crossed that line into all-time classic. What do you think?
I think Festival of Friendship should absolutely be in it. I think it's one of the iconic moments of Monday Night Raw. I think it obviously, like, the Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens story was epic, and they had such a great, like, story with twists and turns and becoming best friends and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, it was such an outlandish segment. It was such a crazy segment. It was very Chris Jericho, right? But yeah, I think it definitely belongs in highlight packages and retrospectives about Raw.
Have you seen the Festival of Friendship figure set?
I have not. There's figure set for it.
Okay, I'm going to send this link to you just now.
Yes, I want to see.
It is absolutely outstanding. I do not have it, but I do have, thanks to Steve Gunn. Now, see, the thing about Steve Gunn that's quite good, I'll give him this. He picks up on things that aren't even hints. Like, I'll mention something in passing, and then 3 months later it turns up, and I'm like, what? So for Christmas, he got me a 4-pack of Mattel Elite figures, all flashbacks, which was Alundra Blaze from SummerSlam 94, Doink the Clown, Heartbreak Hotel Shawn Michaels, and Razor Ramon from his vignettes. But with every figure, you got part of the Heartbreak Hotel set that you could build.
Oh, yeah. You did send me pictures of this.
So I have that, which is amazing. But did you have a look? Look at that.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It comes with a list and a little, like, and the painting is in there. Oh, that's amazing. And it has the Universal title and it has the United States title. And this is great.
If you go to, I think it's the fourth picture. No, the fourth picture is a bit. If you go to the second and third picture, have it like all set up.
Yeah.
So good.
And Jericho's like holding the belt and Kevin Owens is holding the other belt. And that's so good.
And look at the attention to detail, the smashed screen on the second
one. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Anyway.
That's amazing.
The point is Mattel are great. However, they also did make a Milkomania set with Kurt Angle, Steve Austin, and Stephanie. And Kurt Angle's wearing the wrong top, which really annoys me.
Oh, that's annoying. Yeah.
Don't make it if you can't. Like, I think it was Jax, when they were making their Classic Superstars line, they did a Razor Ramon with a ponytail. He never wrestled with the ponytails, Razor Ramon.
I was going to say, he didn't wear a ponytail, did he?
Nope. Which was very frustrating. Anyway.
I mean, I guess China was never an underwater deep sea diver either, but I love that figure. So.
I mean, that was a series dedicated to the absurd.
Oh, right? It's so good. It's still my favorite thing.
Okay, so we should congratulate All Elite Wrestling, who have sold out Double or Nothing in 4 minutes. They had a pre-sale that sold out very quickly, so they are doing great off the bat. What do you make, I guess, of the... So I'll give you the card for Double or Nothing, not All or Nothing. Double or Nothing. We've got Hangman Page against Pac. We've got SoCal Uncensored against... how do you pronounce the guy's name? Is it Sema? Chima?
Sema.
Sema and two other combatants to be determined. And a
some of the
tag.
OWE guys.
Yeah, it's going to be OWE guys, but we don't know who yet. Not to make a blind bit of difference to me. Couldn't point them out of the lineup. Dr. Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, and Kylie Rae, which I think everybody who's from the UK or Sandra, when they saw Kylie Rae was signed and wasn't watching live, went, have they signed Kaylee Rae and spelt it wrong?
Right.
So Dr. Britt Baker, Nyla Rose and Kylie Rae in a triple threat. And then the main event, Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho. Obviously heavy hints to the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks in a tag match. So what do you make of the card so far? The signings, all the AEW stuff?
I think the card looks awesome. I am so excited for it. I think, because I did watch... Did you watch the rally where they announced everything?
I've watched bits of it. I know everything, but I watched bits. Like, I wanted to see... oh, God, what's his name? The openly gay guy, the flamboyant
Sonny Kiss.
Sonny Kiss, yeah.
I was gonna bring up Sonny Kiss. I'm so excited that they signed Sonny Kiss. Like, this rally was just awesome for me. It went on very long. Like, I was actually at work when the rally was happening, but because of, like, apocalyptic weather conditions that have our city declared, like, a literal state of emergency by our governor, it was really slow that night at work, and I decided to just kind of watch the rally in between customers. And I was so happy when Sonny Kiss was the first person that came out, because one of the questions about AEW, you know, they've been saying a lot about how they're going to be inclusive and it's for everyone and all that kind of stuff. And I think a lot of the signings that they made at this rally and a lot of the announcements kind of prove that they're putting their money where their mouth is, right? Like, having Sonny Kiss on the roster, not making a big deal out of it. Like, I would have been fine if they were like, hey, we hired him, he's super queer and that's awesome, and they like announced that would have been fine. Like, I'm so happy that he's there, but for them to like sign Sonny Kiss and to sign Nyla Rose and not make a big deal out of it and be like, no, we're legit. Like, we're signing people who are very talented and who also represent different areas of the world. And it makes me so happy. Like, my little gay heart is just beaming.
So I mean, yeah, the card looks really good so far.
Like, I
Obviously.
cannot wait for Hangman versus Pac. Like, that's the one I think that's the most exciting for me, just because I'm such a big fan of Pac, and I think Hangman Page is amazing. Obviously, Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega is going to be epic and blockbuster, and the one that is going to get more people talking. But yeah, and the triple threat women's match, the Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, and Kylie Rae, I think that one's going to be great too. Like, I've seen a little bit of Kylie Rae's stuff. I really haven't seen much of Nyla Rose. I've been checking out more of her stuff lately since she got signed, and since that's a pretty big deal too. You know, like they signed a trans wrestler, which is awesome. And I mean, I really like Britt Baker. She's fantastically talented as well. So I don't know. There's a lot to look forward to on the Double or Nothing card, and not even the whole thing is announced. I mean, the Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks is just going to be crazy.
And then Aja Kong. I mean, now
Yeah, that's right.
have you ever watched that Survivor Series 95 match? You should go
I
check it out.
haven't.
So on Survivor Series 95, so the only women wrestlers in WWF in 1994 were Alundra Blaze, who was the champion, and she fought with people like Lilani Kai, who came back in, or Bull Nakano, who was around. But then in 95, they just did this like 8-woman tag with a bunch of Japanese women wrestlers and Alundra Blaze, and Aja Kong was in it. And it was all supposed to lead to an Aja Kong Alundra Blaze title match, which never happened. But she's like the star of that match, so it's worth checking out if you fancy seeing Medusa getting flung about by Aja Kong.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds great to me.
But yeah, the fact they sold it out so quick is a good sign, and it all points to, TV deals being signed and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, the good thing is that like it is going to give WWE a bit of a kick up the arse, which is good.
Yeah, it is good. And I think like they're aiming this company at a different type of audience than WWE, right? Like these are going to be people who already like watch a lot of wrestling and, you know, the more like hardcore devoted fans, whereas WWE I think is trying to reach more of a mass audience, which is why, you know, their shows sometimes fall a little bit more flat for people who are fans of actual like professional wrestling and super like wrestling heavy stuff. But I don't know. I am very pleased with the rally, and I'm very pleased with all of the announcements that they've been making. All of the matches that have been announced so far or hinted at, I think are going to be fantastic. And I don't know, it makes me happy to see so much representation on the roster, and it makes me happy that they're actually giving time and attention to a lot of different styles. I think Double or Nothing sounds like it could be similar to All In in the sense of having such a wide variety of types of matches on the card, because you know, like, I mean, we don't know what Cody Rhodes is doing yet. We have no idea, but that's probably going to be a more like sports entertainment-y type match, because that tends to be more what Cody does. Hangman versus Pac is going to be incredible. Jericho and Omega are probably going to tell an epic story. Like, that's probably going to be maybe like more sports entertainment-y too. But I don't know. There's a lot of variety, and I appreciate that because wrestling is kind of a variety show, so something for everyone.
Yeah, I mean it makes sense to not have it makes sense to not have it all be completely like WWE or like something that they would put on to do something different. So, yeah, I'm pretty curious to see how it's all going to go. This is so their show's on May 25th. I wonder if Cody and the guys are going to be wrestling anywhere else before then. I know Cody's just had his knee surgery, so maybe he rests up until then. I
I mean,
wonder.
it's been interesting seeing them kind of pop up at different indie shows, right? Like they showed up at Defy a couple weeks ago, and
I
I
mean,
forget.
they've got to show up somewhere WrestleMania weekend. I
Oh,
just
I'm
have this.
sure they will.
It just would feel weird if they didn't. I mean, it's looking pretty good so far. I guess we'll see what happens. Also, before we go on to sort of WWE news, Jay White, the Switchblade, is the new IWGP champion in New Japan. You know more about him than I do. You've seen more of his stuff than I have. What do you think of the change? And I guess for people who don't watch New Japan, can you give us like a comparable guy in WWE who he would be akin to? Because a lot of people who watch New Japan are talking about how good it is that a young star's got the title and it's been such a great rise for him.
I don't know if I can make a comparison to WWE just because I haven't watched enough New Japan to really like see the entire rise of Jay White. So I'm not necessarily the best person to answer that question, but I have seen some of his work because I've been watching a little bit more New Japan. I still need to watch New Beginning, and I really, really want to watch it, and there just isn't time, and there's so much wrestling. But I am so happy that Jay White is the champion in New Japan right now. I think it's amazing. I think they've done everything right with him in terms of taking a young star and a new star and just like booking him to the moon. And he's a heel. He's one of the best heels in wrestling right now. He's an absolute prick. And so, everyone hates him, but it's like you kind of secretly love to hate him because he's just so like awful and reprehensible, right? And I'm not surprised that they gave Jay White the belt because, I mean, everything was building toward that, right? Like, there's no reason to keep it on Tanahashi right now. And, having Jay White beat Okada at Wrestle Kingdom was just like crazy, Like, that was not expected. That was a huge shock, because Okada's Okada, And for Jay White to just like beat him clean and for Jay White to, stack up these really high profile wins on the way to winning the belt. He's on top of the world and it feels natural and it feels good. And like, I mean, the guy can cut a killer promo. He is a great character and a great wrestler. And it's really cool to see a company get so behind someone and to have everything go right in that way. So yeah, I'm excited that Jay White is the new champion. I couldn't be happier about it. And I really, really can't wait to see that match.
So yeah, I wonder what the I'm kind of curious what the card's going to be for the ROH New Japan Super Show, because I mean I guess they've sold out so they don't really need to worry about it, but you would think this is going to be the biggest card they've ever had outside of
You would think
Japan.
so.
But then like their cards in the States previously haven't exactly set the world on fire, so I hope that they come up with something.
Well, and
Maybe.
they had that whole fiasco where they couldn't have the Japanese talent go over for the New Japan shows recently, which was not great. So yeah, I don't know, the Madison Square Garden show is going to be interesting because I know it's sold out, so they don't necessarily have to worry about selling that out, but I think a lot of their reputation is going to hinge on how well that show goes, because if that show's a disappointment to people and if it's just mediocre and it's just okay, then that's definitely going to not spell good things for them selling more tickets in the United States in future. And if they're trying to have this international expansion, which they are, then they kind of need to nail that show,
What
especially
I'm
with like All Elite and everything happening kind of concurrently. Then I mean they need to make waves.
well, so say for example, say you take Ollie and I, right, who are like typically WWE fans. That's what we watch, but we watch other stuff as well, but primarily WWE. And if we were in town for a WWE show and there was an AEW show on, we'd 100% go to it, no problem. With the New Japan show, I'm quite hesitant, so I know what the card is. I know he's quite hesitant. Like, do you think they have to have stuff that doesn't just appeal to the New Japan audience, or do you think that that's what it needs to be? Does it need to just be completely New Japan? What do you think?
I think having a blend is a good idea. And I mean, it is a Ring of Honor New Japan show, right? It's a co-bill. So they have the opportunity to use different talent and whatnot. I mean, there's a lot of like cross-pollination between the two anyway. But I think what New Japan has done in the past that I think has kind of hurt them has been to try to aim their cards more to like the US audiences, like using a lot more US talent. And when people go to New Japan shows, you want to see New Japan. Like if you're going to a New Japan show, it's like you want to see the performers that you can't just see at Ring of Honor, or you can't just see at all of the other indies. And so I think trying to cater to US audiences too much has been a problem for New Japan. So I would like to see them have a blend, but still have it be very New Japan heavy. But I mean, like you do kind of have to bring in people like you or Ollie as well. But it seems like a lot of the stars in New Japan have notoriety of their own. I mean, like even you, if Okada or Tanahashi or someone is on the card, like those are someone, those are people that you would probably be fairly interested in seeing, right?
Yeah, I mean, a blend would be good. I mean, I feel like Jericho is one that, I mean, they surely should get him on there. But
Jericho's going to be really interesting to see what he does at this point, because obviously he's signed with All Elite, but it's not like the All Elite contracts are like the WWE contracts where people can't work anywhere else. And it seems like everyone's kind of tailored to their own situation. Like Kenny Omega in his contract says that he can work for New Japan if he wants to. And I would not be surprised if Chris Jericho has it in his contract that he can work for New Japan. I mean, Chris Jericho has said that he is interested in working in with New Japan more in future. So yeah, watching the moves of Mr. Christopher Jericho is going to be very interesting, I feel, this year.
So, we should talk about the elephant in the room. No, it's not the elephant in the room. So, we'll kind of talk about this as a one thing because it went over Raw and SmackDown. So, they do this story throughout Raw where Becky Lynch has been invited to Raw by the McMahons. Triple H and Stephanie want her to apologize. She's got to the end of the night to do it. And then throughout the night, she's talking to like Ronda tells her, you know, just do it, just get to her match. That's what we want you to do. Alexa Bliss is kind of like half being, seems like she's being genuine, half being snide, when she's like, you know, if you apologize, like who's gonna look up to you after that? And then Finn tells her to just do it, which leads to the main event segment where Becky does it, and then Ronda comes out. They're about to have a face off. Vince comes out. Which is funny because Vince starts coming out. They try to play his music, but they stop immediately because he's already where he needs to be in position.
Yeah, it was a really weird technical glitch.
And then Vince says, "You know, they might accept your apology, Becky, but I'm not. You've got a bad attitude. So do you, Ronda. So you know, so you're not the man. I'm the man. Sometimes the man has to make tough decisions, and the one I'm going to make tonight is that you're suspended for 60 days, which takes us to after WrestleMania." So we need someone to take your place. We need someone with charisma, someone who knows their lane and stays in it. We need Charlotte Flair. And out comes Charlotte looking absolutely in love with herself. And Vince raises her hand, says that's what we're going to see at WrestleMania. Becky's fuming. Ronda's pissed. And we go off there. So for that part of the story, what do you make of it? Talk me through your thoughts of the story with Becky on Monday and the execution. It seems that we're going to be leading to the triple threat.
Oh yeah, it seems like we're leading to the triple threat, which is kind of what we expected. I love about like 95% of this. I think the story long or the show long story with Becky having to apologize, I think those kinds of stories don't always hit for me because it's just kind of like, well, why wouldn't you just apologize and get in the match? Like, why wouldn't you do that? But I kind of like that Becky is kind of, you know, internally wrestling with, you know, are people going to be disappointed in me if I just apologize to them? I mean, Triple H and Stephanie are the pettiest of bitches, right? Because they come out and they're so sanctimonious and they're just like, we apologized on our end, but we just, you know, you need to apologize. And that's, you know, they're just trying to hold that power over Becky and try to manipulate her. And I can understand why Becky wouldn't necessarily want to give in to that. So it was kind of an interesting story arc. And I liked her talking to, you know, Finn Balor, and I liked her talking to Alexa Bliss, who's, you know, been champion, and she's, you know, faced Alexa for championships and stuff before. And, you know, and then talking to Ronda, I think, is the really interesting one, because the Ronda segment to me shows that Ronda Rousey, the character right now on Raw, wants Becky Lynch in that match. She doesn't want Charlotte in that match. She wants Becky Lynch. Like, it is Ronda versus Becky is the story. That's been the story. That's what Ronda wants. She's like, I want you in my WrestleMania main event.
She's also said
So,
multiple times that she wants Becky at 100%. She doesn't want any excuses if she
no.
beats Becky.
No, like Rhonda wants a fight, and she wants a, you know, she wants Becky at 100%, but that's, you know, that's the fight that she wants to have, and that's the fight that everyone wants to have, right? So I think having Rhonda tell Becky to apologize so they can get to their match is very key to the story, because in the end, Becky Lynch does apologize, right? And I think some people have a problem with that because it's like her character would never do that, but the way she apologized and the way she came off afterwards, I was okay with it, because I mean, we saw it on Retro Raw. Steve Austin kind of did the same thing, right? Like, he said he was sorry and then proceeded to like beat up Vince McMahon and be an asshole to him or whatever. Because, you know, okay, like, she apologizes as a technicality. She's like, I'm sorry. Now that that's out of the way, she starts like railing into Triple H and Stephanie again, right? Like, I can't remember exactly what she said, but she was talking about herself and she was bigging herself up and she was talking about her WrestleMania main event. And because, like, the apology felt like more of a technicality, and she was still like betting on herself and saying how, you know, like she was the most important part of the story, the apology didn't really bother me. The only part of the story that I don't like is if you're going to do a show long story about like whether or not Becky has to apologize, and then she does, and that's the whole thing, like that is what has been set up. To have Vince McMahon come out at the last minute and just change the rules is frustrating and just kind of reeks of the authority circle jerk that we've seen so many times, because like I mean, we've talked about this on Retro Raw too. I don't like when my expectations are set up and then, you know, there's just a swerve that comes out of nowhere that doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't understand why Vince McMahon can just override Triple H and Stephanie. Is he like more in charge than them? I thought it was all four of them were on equal ground. Like, does that mean that if Triple H doesn't like a decision that Stephanie makes, he can just like change his mind? Like, and when I'm starting to think more about authority politics than the story at hand, it kind of is annoying and starts grating on me. But if I kind of go, all right, well, I mean, it's an authority clusterfuck because of course it is, because it's Raw and whatnot. Like, and you know, as Becky Lynch says, you McMahons have been screwing people over for decades. I mean, Becky Lynch clearly watches this show, right? But for Vince McMahon to come out and bring out corporate Charlotte, I love. I think corporate Charlotte is amazing, and I think she is a great addition to this match. I am sold on the triple threat idea now. I wanted it to be Ronda versus Becky, and there's still a part of me that would prefer it to be Ronda versus Becky, but the way they've introduced Charlotte has definitely won me over. I think it's brilliant. It introduces a proper heel in the match. Like, heel smug Charlotte is the best Charlotte Flair. Like, she's fantastic at just being a smug prick who's super entitled and into herself. And I think her being the corporate choice and whatnot is working on multiple levels because that's true. Like, it rings true to me that Charlotte Flair is the chosen one. Obviously, they wanted Charlotte versus Ronda to be the WrestleMania main event like a year ago. That was the plan because obviously, like, Charlotte is their cash cow and Ronda Rousey's Ronda Rousey. So, of course, they're going to put those two, you know, pretty blonde people together in the WrestleMania main event. And Becky Lynch threw a wrench in the works. And so it makes me upset because it's like, oh, I want Becky to be in that match. I want it to not be Charlotte versus Ronda. Nobody wants it to be Charlotte versus Ronda. Ronda doesn't want it to be Charlotte versus Ronda, right? And that's brilliant because you just want Becky to get in so badly that I don't know, like there's more of an emotional investment in Becky's journey now at this point. And also it works to introduce a heel in the match that isn't Ronda because I think Ronda was starting to kind of lean into more heelish tendencies, but they still want Ronda Rousey to be a babyface. And now Ronda Rousey has a reason to be upset too. You know, like she's a little bit more sympathetic because her WrestleMania main event that she wants, that one-on-one match with Becky Lynch, is being, you know, fucked with. And she's not happy about it. Ronda Rousey's been talking on social media about how she is not happy about this decision. So I think it adds a lot more drama and intrigue, and I am very curious to see how we get back to Becky Lynch because if Vince McMahon has suspended her for 60 days, then, you know, what's going to happen? Like, my theory, and, you know, the theory that seems to be set up on Raw and on Ronda's social media is that Ronda's going to demand that Becky Lynch be unsuspended and be in that match or she's not going to fight. And I think that's an interesting story to tell too. So, yeah, like I love it. I absolutely love it in the end. I'm annoyed about the Vince McMahon just changing the rules thing, but if I can try to set that detail aside, then I'm all in on this. I know what you think, but tell the people.
So I was very, very hesitant about the idea of Charlotte coming into it. Just myself, I thought, what are they going to do story-wise? How are they going to introduce her? I was worried about it. And then I thought they knocked it out of the park on Monday. And it's, you know, like some people don't like it. You don't need to like it, but it's the outrage that's just, I don't get. I don't understand because, so Ronda Rousey doesn't want to be a heel. She wants to be a baby face. You can tell that she gets very flustered when she's a straight up heel. And if it's just her and Becky, she would inevitably be the heel. She wouldn't like it. And now that's another whole problem. So you can, you know, think of that what you will. But it makes all the sense. As soon as Vince brought her out, I was like, that's it? How have we not seen this coming? It was so obvious, but so brilliant in the way that you never thought of it.
Yeah.
And I even think that the Vince thing can kind of, I mean, maybe I'm doing a Sondra and making my own storylines here, but it kind of adds into the fact that Triple H and Stephanie are trying to be better, and then Vince is just overruling them. So Vince is still stuck in the past. Maybe they're not as stuck in the past. And then the, you know, Becky saying sorry, I can understand. But then, like, so some people are like, oh, this is just a rehash of Steve Austin. And then when she says sorry, I can't believe she says sorry. Well, Steve Austin doesn't say sorry. Like, are you annoyed because it's the same thing as before, or are you annoyed because it's a different story? You can only pick one. You can't be annoyed that it's the same thing and then be annoyed when stuff is different. Like,
Well, and I feel like there are differences in the story, like slight ones, right? It's very similar to Steve Austin and Vince McMahon, but I feel like Becky Becky is a different type of character in some ways. Like, she's less of a dick than Steve Austin, which is helpful. And I don't know, like, the alignments are different too, like with who's being brought in. Because, I mean, right now on Retro Raw, like going toward the supposed triple threat at WrestleMania that doesn't end up happening, like the alignments of who's champion and who's corporate and all that kind of stuff are completely different, because Mankind is the babyface champion that you kind of like want to stay the babyface champion, and The Rock doesn't feel as inserted in it as Charlotte Flair does. Like, I think inserting Charlotte Flair into the match as the ultimate heel move is different to what they did 20 years ago. It's, there are a lot of similarities with the story for sure, but you know, that's kind of one of the things about wrestling. And I mean, you see the same thing in all sorts of media, like in comic books, you know, stories are recycled. In wrestling, stories are always going to be recycled. And when they work, they work. If they're trying to do like a shot for shot remake of the Attitude Era, then I don't think it would work. And I don't think it would fall as well as they're doing right now. They're letting the characters be themselves.
Well,
Like,
also, it's like, you know, so there's people who long for the days of the Attitude Era, and this is the good part. Like, when they
yeah.
did shit like this, where you don't expect it, or they do something like, you know, right now we're watching Retro Raw, and Mankind's still the champion, but you know that he isn't, you know, you know he's not in the WrestleMania main event, but you're wondering how did they get there. So we kind of thought that Ronda, Becky, and Charlotte, the triple threat, is going to happen, but how are they going to get there? And to be honest, I think they got there better than any other way I could have thought of. And another way that I think just is sets it up is like, so Becky Lynch is out, right? She's out, she's suspended. And obviously that's going to play out how it is. Not the night after Elimination Chamber, but on February 25th, it's Ric Flair's 70th birthday on Raw.
I feel like one Becky Lynch might show up to that particular
So
celebration.
that would be great. And
And I would love for Becky Lynch to get retribution on Ric Flair for rapey kissing her that one time.
I was going to say double bubble, but that's a different thing. Two for the price of one, yeah. So I thought it was great. I really enjoyed the segment. It felt, when I finished watching Raw, I immediately felt like that's the WrestleMania main event. Those three. And I think Charlotte does deserve to be in there. I know some people don't agree with that, but, and this is maybe an unpopular opinion, I think she is the best wrestler of the three. Like, as a pure wrestler. So I think that her being in it will bring it up a little notch, which it would have been great anyway, because the other two are great. But I think she just, like, she's got something about her. Ever since she kicked into that new gear around Survivor Series, she's just been a different level. And then she's going to be front row for Ronda's match on Sunday. It all worked really well for me. So then come to SmackDown, we get the Charlotte promo where she comes out and she says, I mean, she cuts this money promo about how, you know, poor Becky, and she shouldn't have got suspended, but oh, look what she did. And then there's a bit where the fans are chanting "You suck" or something, and she just says, "No, you'll all be sitting there chanting 'This is awesome' like you usually do." And
Oh, she reamed into the fans, which was awesome. Like, she wanted the fans in her promo. I thought that was amazing when they were chanting for Becky, and she goes,
she never used to
"What?
do that. She used to
What?"
fluster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she absolutely owned it. I think smug dickhead Charlotte Flair here. She still, her delivery still needs a little bit more work in terms of sounding natural. Like, she still sounds just a little bit like a robot. But being absolutely smug and full of herself works. Like, she cuts promos so much better when she's being a smug dickhead. And I mean, she brought up some valid points. She said, you know, I am the backbone of this company, you know, I'm the backbone of this division, and no one's going to want to hear it, you know, obviously, and no one does want to hear it. Everyone's like, boo, Charlotte, boo, you're the chosen titled brick. We don't like you. And
You're the chosen title prick. I'm sure that's exactly what the fans in America were shouting at her.
yep, that's definitely what they were saying, I'm sure. But I mean, that's the story, right? She is the chosen entitled prick and no one likes her, and she's just like, deal with it. I'm awesome. She's basically doing what Roman Reigns should have done the entire time when everyone hated him for being chosen entitled, and she's just like, yeah, I am, and I'm the backbone of this division. And what was her line where she said, like, I something about someone who's only had a few good months,
Yeah, she was
like,
basically talking
of
about how Becky's only been hot for a couple of months, and it's like, why would you bet on someone who's only been hot for a couple of months when I've been carrying this division for years?
Yeah, because she said that Vince McMahon made a smart business decision, you know, by putting her in there instead of Becky. And, you know, all of the things that Charlotte is saying make sense. They're kind of true. Like, she has carried the women's division for a long time. She is great. She is phenomenal. But,
Do you think
oh
the
man, it's
fear
easy
is
to hate her.
the fear? I think the fear for a lot of fans, and I do get it. Like, the fear is that, oh no, with Charlotte being put in there, is she gonna take Becky's thunder? But to me, it just feels more like a stack in the deck, but in
Yeah, see,
a
for me, that's going to make Becky's win so much more victorious.
who would you
Like,
rather see her tap out, Ronda or Charlotte?
that's tough. It's really tough.
I
At
feel
this
like I
point,
feel like I want it to be Charlotte because then you can still do the one-on-one with Ronda, and Ronda
yeah.
still get that kind of, Ronda still get that kind of thing of you never beat me.
Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of the fans who are very angry about this are, I understand where they're coming from, because a lot of people are like, well, do we really trust WWE to tell a story properly? Do we trust WWE not to drop the ball with this? Do we trust them to follow through? You know, are they going to just do what they always do and go for the safe choice and put the belt on Charlotte and, you know, go with the same old thing? And I guess where I'm at right now is this story has been handled so perfectly right now. And this wasn't supposed to happen. It was supposed to be Becky versus Ronda at Survivor Series until Becky got hurt, which Charlotte brought up in her promo actually about how Becky is self-destructive and, you know, she got hurt and now she got herself suspended. And, you
Yeah,
know,
but
Becky
it
doesn't
feels like
want to be in the main event of WrestleMania.
it feels like it was always part of the story.
It feels like it was always part of the story. It's the same thing they did with Daniel Bryan, right? Like, they did not plan for things to go that way, but they used the pieces of the story to make something epic. And they did not plan for things to go this way. They did not plan for this to be a triple threat, but they're using the pieces of the story and the elements that have happened over time to make something epic and to make a good story. And I feel like this one is too important and they're treating it with too much care for them to drop the ball on it. I mean, when the McMahons insert themselves into your story, you know that it's something the company is behind, right? And it is frustrating. I understand fans who are frustrated with the McMahons just inserting themselves into the story because, yes, you could have told a story where Charlotte says, Becky Lynch wasn't supposed to be in the Royal Rumble. I am the rightful winner of the Royal Rumble because Becky Lynch was not supposed to be in there. So I deserve to be in the WrestleMania match and I deserve for it to be a triple threat. But I feel like that story almost makes Charlotte a little too sympathetic. Like, she's not sympathetic. We wouldn't like her for that. But corporate Charlotte just being an utter arsehole and being in the pocket of Vince McMahon, who, I don't know if you noticed this, they're calling him Mr. McMahon on commentary very specifically. I think that makes her so hated that Becky's, I hope that Becky Lynch wins at WrestleMania. I will be so angry if Charlotte Flair wins, but that's part of the intrigue, right?
Also
Because
feels
there's
like a
that.
Daniel Bryan story, right? Because people were terrified he might not win at WrestleMania.
And like, I was pretty sure Daniel Bryan was going to win at WrestleMania. I'm less sure about Becky Lynch. Like, I feel like they will let her win. I feel like they will because she's the biggest star in the company. Like, she's the most over by far. Charlotte Flair's out there. They're chanting for Becky. Every time Ronda appears, they chant for Becky. Everyone wants Becky Lynch. And I mean, there's no reason for them to not give it to her at this point because she's so popular and she's proven herself. She can carry herself in interviews. She can carry herself doing media. Like, she's amazing. And I think the fact that you have both Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair on top right now, and Ronda Rousey, all three of them are big fucking stars. But to give fans that moment in the main events of WrestleMania, if can you imagine Charlotte Flair holding the belt up and fans just booing a main event again? I don't think they want that. I think that, you know, now that the Roman Reigns problem has been sidelined,
I was really wondering what word you were going to use to handle that there.
it would be really fucking great if we got a nice WrestleMania main event moment for the first time since Daniel Bryan, right? And I think they know that that's what the fans want. And I think WWE has to be a little more careful about alienating their fans at this point, right? Like, they are feeling competition from AEW and they are feeling competition from, you know, people who like New Japan and all that kind of stuff. They're really upping their game and it seems like they're trying harder with their television. And I don't know. I just feel like they've done everything with Becky Lynch to show that they're behind her. It doesn't feel like they're trying to hold her down. I think they're going to push her to the moon, and that's what I want to see.
Yeah, and the other kind of couple of things that were on my mind about it were because there is total credence to the idea of, well, if Becky Lynch faced Ronda one on one, she would get the she would get the glory of it, and and that would be it. There would be no sharing of it. And I think some people are frustrated with the idea was, why does Charlotte need to be in it to water it down? I don't think she would. I don't think she will water it down. I think she's a very strong character. I think the fact that so many people, and this is more of a hardcore thing than a mainstream thing, but a lot of hardcore people resent Charlotte Flair and resent her her rise through the ranks. And I think using that as part of the match is really clever. Mm-hmm. Also, it means that you've then got a story coming out of WrestleMania. Charlotte's got, because the thing is, people want Asuka, Charlotte, and Becky and Ronda, and so did I. But I think where I've kind of turned my head on it is that I'm pretty sure if Charlotte and Asuka had faced off, Charlotte was going to win that match.
Do you think so?
Well, because I just don't see her losing all this stuff leading up to WrestleMania and then losing to Asuka. I just don't see it. I think they would, or I'm not confident enough that would happen. Because I think I just think she would, you know, she was supposed to be in the WrestleMania main event. She gets taken out of it, and then she's in a lower card match. I could see them saying, "Look, we'll give you this instead." Not that I don't think she's backstage demanding anything, but you know, Charlotte is one of the main stars on the show. You know, she can go into a lot of media, which somebody like Asuka can't. So I get it. I get the metrics of it, but I think now that's going to end up being a good thing. Somebody brought up on your Twitter, I think it was Mariana, had said, you know, I don't trust WWE, I'm paraphrasing, but I don't trust WWE because, you know, we all thought Roman was going to win and then Brock won. And I think where the big difference is, and you kind of touched on this, was that nobody wanted Roman to win. Like, nobody wanted, like, we were in that building. And I mean, Sondra was drunk times 10 people, but
yes,
nobody wanted him to win. And there was, like, I can't remember being at a WrestleMania main event with, like, more that had less atmosphere than that main event.
It had an atmosphere of anger. Like,
I don't even think it was, to me, from what I remember, the atmosphere was just like, oh, this match. Like, nobody, like, even when Brock won, people weren't like excited that Brock won. They were just like, oh God, more of this.
I think through my drunken haze, I just looked at you and was like, what? Did that just happen?
Which, like, is not the way you should. I mean, the WrestleMania main event should be one of the biggest matches of the year. You should be made to feel the way that, I mean, Roman and Brock in 2015 felt that way, because people at that point wanted Brock to win. Then you got the Seth thing, which, you know, saved WrestleMania for you.
Yes.
So I just think that I think it's a different situation, would be my take. But do you want to expand a little bit on what you said?
I can't remember exactly what I said, but I mean, my general feelings on it feels different because I think we wanted Roman to beat Brock because we just wanted to get the experiment over with. It's not that we were invested in Roman Reigns as a character. It's not that we were invested in his rise to the championship, which we've seen so many times. It was just like, we wanted to get it over with so that the pain could stop, right? We wanted to stop having Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar to try and coronate him as the guy. Like, we know he's the guy, just get it over with, give him the belt so we can move on with our lives. This is very different to that. We want to see Becky Lynch coronated as the queen of everything because she's the fucking man and we love her. Everyone is universally behind Becky Lynch. Everyone is universally against Charlotte in this situation. Everyone, you know, is universally against Ronda in this situation. We want Becky. Like, there is no other option other than Becky, right? And so, I mean, with Roman and Brock, it's just kind of like, yeah, it was weird that Brock won and we weren't happy about it, but it was just one of those like, okay, well, this is baffling and a bad decision, but it's not like anyone was going to be super elated for Roman Reigns to win either. With this situation, it's like, if Charlotte wins that belt, there's going to be a riot at WrestleMania, like such a riot, and not in the Ruby sense of the word, like an actual one. And like, I mean, the actual moment of Becky Lynch winning and raising that title and whatnot that everyone wants to see, if that moment happens, then WrestleMania will have provided the crowd so much joy. And I think WWE knows the difference. You know, like, WWE with Roman Reigns was just digging their heels in and being incredibly, incredibly stubborn. And you can say that they've kind of done the same thing with Charlotte Flair, but I don't think Roman Reigns had anyone against him. Like, specifically with Brock, Brock was not like Daniel Bryan facing Roman Reigns, where he was someone that we just really, really wanted to win too, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, yeah, the situation is different. You know, Roman's like an anomaly, and because he was a great wrestler, but just...
But he broke storytelling for years.
Yeah, he did. So, It's and the thing with Becky is I think that also there are some people who maybe don't get the Becky Lynch hype so far, and I think for them she also needs to win because she needs to win for them to be like, oh, okay, because maybe some people don't want to get invested. Cause, oh, you know, she's a flash in the pan. Last year she was on the pre-show or whatever, and they just need to kind of prove that wrong by keeping featuring her. And then, you know, whether it's SummerSlam, she has the big match with Ronda again, or a match with Charlotte, or a match with Stephanie, or a match with Asuka, or whoever it is. There's a lot of stuff you can build to. What else on Raw captured your interest that you wanted to give a little bit of time to?
I'm trying to remember what else happened on Raw. The Revival are finally the champions. Finally, the Revival have won, and I'm so happy about it. I thought the tag match with Bobby Roode and Chad Gable and the Revival was awesome.
It
I
was
think it
brilliant.
was, yeah.
Could have done
I
without
mean,
the 12
other,
matches to get there, but yeah, it was awesome.
yeah. I mean, other than the like stuff with Becky, it was the only other like really notable thing on the show. Although I think Nikki Cross and Ruby Riott had a good match. Grand Rapids did not seem to care. But yeah, the Revival winning the tag team championships makes me so happy. And Bobby Roode and Chad Gable, actually, like, I haven't really been paying that much attention to them as a team because I, you know, just started watching Raw again, but they worked really well. I mean, seeing Chad Gable fight, you know, the Revival is always going to be great, and it's always going to give me NXT flashbacks, and it's always going to be really good. But I mean, they even managed to make Bobby Roode interesting, and like I think Bobby Roode was really good in that match too. There was tons of tandem offense and like all sorts of kickouts and all sorts of things, and it kind of seems like the Revival's just been losing and losing and losing and losing and losing and losing and losing. And I think I texted you. I was like, if they don't win this, then what even are we doing here? And they did. They finally won. And I'm so pleased for them. I love the Revival. I have since they were mechanics. Yeah. So I was elated with the result of this match. And I mean, I thought it was really cool to see them get such a spotlight on Raw too, because I know that those teams have been killing it on house shows all week, and like putting on like 40-minute matches and stuff that are just like people have been raving about these matches. And so it's really nice that we got to see it and that it got a lot of time. I wish so much of it hadn't happened during ad breaks, but yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a really great spotlight for those guys, and I want to see Chad Gable do more things. He is so ridiculously good at wrestling.
Chad Gable is very good, and Bobby Roode's been good in this team as well, to be fair. But it's just nobody cares about them.
I mean, it's like Chad Gable is kind of actual magic, though, like in terms of making tag team partners interesting. I mean, Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin never really did a whole lot
Oh,
together.
American Alpha 2.0.
Yeah. But I mean, Chad Gable and Jason Jordan, when they had their epic love story to become a tag team, like, I mean, that was all like quirky Chad Gable doing vignettes backstage. And like, the little bits that I've seen of Chad Gable kind of like adopting the glorious thing and coming out and standing in front of Bobby Roode and stuff. I love those little touches. Like, he is a very good professional wrestler. And if WWE doesn't have anything for him after this, you know, tag title situation or whatever, because my fear is that Chad Gable's just going to fade back into obscurity again, and that this is just going to be another failed tag team for Chad Gable, and that they'll be like, okay, well now we're behind the Revival, and the Revival feel like a thing, which is great. But you also need to have teams to challenge. So I think the tag team divisions really need the shakeup, like really bad. And I kind of hope that we still get to see Chad Gable doing good tag team things in future. And if we don't, then I don't know when his contract is up, but maybe going elsewhere would be a better situation for him.
Raw was quite a filler week this week. There wasn't as much good stuff. But we did get Seth Rollins responding to the attack from Brock Lesnar, and then Heyman came out, and I thought that Seth cut a pretty good promo on Paul Heyman, and it got me a little bit more into the match than I was before. What did you think of the promo?
I thought it was good. Yeah, for sure. I think Seth Rollins and Paul Heyman work well together. I mean, Paul Heyman, obviously, we know he's a great promo. That is not shocking news. But Seth Rollins can definitely hold his own too. And I think Seth Rollins is feeling very likable going into this match, which is good. I am not as hyped for Seth Rollins at WrestleMania as I am for like Becky Lynch at WrestleMania, for instance. So it's one of those things that's kind of been in the background. Like, when you think of the winner of the Royal Rumble, I think, well, Becky Lynch won the Royal Rumble, and then it's like, oh yeah, I guess Seth did too. But yeah, I mean, I thought the promo was good, and it did build more interest for the match for sure.
Heyman said that it was a suicide mission for Rollins to go to WrestleMania against Lesnar. There's not really much else on Raw I want to talk about.
I'm trying to remember what else happened because you had Ruby and Nikki.
We got the 6-man tag with Balor and McIntyre that led into Balor, Angle, and Strowman against McIntyre, Corbin, and Lashley.
Why is Kurt Angle still wrestling?
He has 7 children.
But he just looks like he should not be wrestling.
So
like,
see if I was able to have kids, right? If I was able to have kids, then I would have 2, 3 max. 2 preferred, 3rd maybe if it's like I've not got the boy yet and I really want a boy. But after that I'm stopping because I don't want to have so many kids that when I'm old and want to retire that I need to deal with all these children.
Yeah, like there was a time in my life I entertained the notion of having children and I never wanted more than 2 because I would never want to be outnumbered by them. But obviously that's just not a thing that's happening. So I don't understand it. It's fine for people.
Is it completely off the table just in case there's anybody out there who wants to procreate with you?
Yeah, no children. Nothing's coming out of here. Mm-mm.
Well, there's an image to send us. And we also got
Kevin. I just do not want. But the thing with the 6-man tag that cracked me up was they used the whole, like, someone had their foot on the rope, right? And so Chad Patton came out to, like, tell John Cone that he had made the wrong choice and to, like, review the footage or something. And it's kind of baffling when referees do that because, like, that happens once every, like, every once in a great while. They'll be like, oh, yeah, we can totally do replays here, apparently. And it always just kind of upsets storytelling. But my favorite thing was Chad Patton, like, demonstrating to John Cone how foot on the rope works. Like, he put his own foot onto the rope and was just like, no, his foot was on the rope. It was the most overstated thing. And I think Chad Patton's performance there was pretty funny.
So, yeah, Raw was a pretty kind of generic show. I mean, we are getting Ruby Riott and Ronda Rousey on Sunday. And we got to see Ruby have a match with Nikki Cross, which I know that you enjoyed.
I did enjoy it. And I it does bum me out, though, that Nikki's just kind of hanging about Raw in the doldrums doing nothing. Like, I don't have a problem necessarily with her losing matches. I know some people are pretty upset about it, but I don't understand this use of Nikki Cross versus, like, I don't know, having her on SmackDown to build to a match with Asuka because Asuka's, like, forgotten and nowhere right now. That's one of the things about the triple threat that is a bummer is that Asuka's just being kind of like left it and she's just kind of forgotten. Like she's just in the background. She's the champion, but like with WWE building to the tag team titles, the women's tag team titles, and then also building to this like killer main event with Ronda and Becky and Charlotte, unfortunately Asuka's being kind of like left off the table, which is a bummer. And so it seems like they had the opportunity calling up Nikki and Lacey that you could have a new character, you know, come and interrupt Asuka, you know, someone who hasn't faced her before. And that could have been a really interesting story to tell. So it just seems like kind of a missed opportunity. But I did really enjoy the match with Ruby and Nikki. And it makes sense for Ruby to win it because, I mean, she's going on to face Ronda Rousey at Elimination Chamber. It's been interesting because like Ruby on social media has said, you know, like my match was announced in a tweet. I'm being treated like an afterthought. You know, you're talking about the WrestleMania main event as though it's a set in stone. Like I have a chance to win the title. And I think Charlotte actually said in her promo that she was going to be, you know, front row for the match with Ronda and Ruby and that, you know, she might have a new WrestleMania opponent. And I liked that from Charlotte Flair because that Ruby Riott is not going to win this match. We know this, but in story, you should not be treating it like it's just a foregone conclusion that Ruby Riott is just basically enhancement talent for Ronda Rousey. You should be treating it like there's some sort of intrigue and some sort of chance. And I'm actually really looking forward to Ronda versus Ruby. I think it's going to be better than people think.
It's a fine line though, isn't it? Because you kind of have this thing of you want to treat everything seriously, but you can't push everyone at one time. Mm-hmm. And Ruby's so below, you know, the main three's level that I think it would, I know it sounds bad, but it would almost be quite insulting to make you think that, but then it's a difficult balance because then Ruby's kind of, you know, shot in the foot before she gets going kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I think the best thing Ruby can do is have, and Ronda's able to do this with most, is have a match that people remember and kind of be a little bit more memorable in the loss.
Yeah, like Sasha did.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's...
like Sasha had no chance against Ronda. We knew that too.
No. But yeah, so I think that's probably the best shot. So as we go over to SmackDown, I wanted to talk first of all about the Asuka situation. So
yes.
Did you see WrestleVotes tweet?
No,
Okay,
I
so
don't
I.
follow WrestleVotes because I don't like
Oh,
spoilers.
you can't. Okay, so I. I ended up like DMing WrestleVotes today because they
Oh,
follow
really?
Inside the Ropes, and I was like, "What's happening with Asuka?" I was sick
Did
of.
WrestleVotes get back to you?
They said, "Working on it right now. We'll have an answer in a couple of hours." And then they put their answer up, so I'm glad. I like to think I nudged it along. So here's what they said. Been getting a ton of Asuka questions. As far as I know, they do have a plan for Mania. Just wasn't wise for Asuka to be featured the last few weeks. WWE doesn't want excessive brand jumping prior to WrestleMania, leaving only Lana or Vega for the Chamber. That's not a pay-per-view match WWE wanted.
Which makes sense. I
So, I mean, I
mean,
can't really argue with it. I mean, if she's not, would it be better to see her just beating a jobber? I don't know. I don't. But they seem to have a plan. I know Natalia was tweeting out today saying that she if people are jumping ship now, then she knows who she's got her eyes on. Put a photo of Asuka up.
well, it's what I'm saying about, like, why did you bring Nikki Cross and Lacey Evans to Raw? Like, why is everyone on Raw? That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think technically they're all supposed to be still going from place to place, but they only ever seem to be on Raw. I think the problem is that because Raw's 3 hours, you have time to put everybody on it. But with SmackDown, there's not a lot of time to get everybody featured. But I was thinking about it as I was watching the Becky and Charlotte and Ronda thing in the main event, and I was watching the Charlotte thing at the beginning. I think the problem for Asuka is that she's kind of like stuck in this middle area where she's so good. And the company like her. I mean, they're not putting a belt on her if they don't like her. And they're trying to rehab her and stuff, but then it just shows you the absolute like mediocrity of the SmackDown Women's division. Like it is like and we knew it was bad, but it's really bad.
It's very bad. And when two of your top stars that are actually very, very good are in a Raw storyline right now, like, there's nobody left. And it's not good. I mean, we can, bang our heads against the wall and talk about needing to bring in more women and needing to have more women wrestle on SmackDown all we like, but they just don't seem to be doing it, and it's very frustrating. Like, Asuka being off this particular episode of SmackDown bums me out because she's been off of SmackDown since she won the title, and I would like to see her do something. But I think it's one of those situations where I almost give the company a little bit more leeway than I normally would in this kind of situation, because women are the central focus of the show right now. And because, like, they had so many killer women segments on Raw. Like, they had, the triple threat tag thing too. And they did have, like, a women's match on SmackDown because they did the same, like, triple threat tag deal. So it's not like they're not featuring women. It's just, like, for fans of Asuka, and I'm a fan of Asuka, it's a big bummer that she's being left behind. And I kind of understand that it's hard to juggle so many stories. And so, they have this awesome women's story with Becky and Charlotte and Ronda, and then they're putting a lot of effort and time into building the idea of a women's tag team championship. The problem with putting a lot of time and energy into building the idea of a women's tag team championship is that you need to have women tag teams, right? Which means that basically the entire rest of the roster is tied up in, the tag match at Elimination Chamber, and then there's just nobody left for Asuka. I mean, Lana or Zelina Vega are not really great options
Kill
for
me
Asuka
now.
to be facing. I mean, actually, Asuka versus Zelina Vega could be a good match, but
She, I mean, Zelina Vega has not filled me with any confidence so far that that would happen. The other thing is like, so I'd put a thing out on Twitter just saying, here's a couple of examples of what I would say are suggestions that could happen. I said you could put Nikki Bella in there with Asuka. And I'm not, and again, it would get into this whole conversation of the people who don't
Like, at
like
WrestleMania, you mean?
at WrestleMania, yeah,
Yeah, which I would love to see.
but people. So some people who don't like Nikki Bella, and I get it, like don't understand the wrestling business. Like they have this hit, they have this big show that's worth millions of dollars called Total Divas and Total Bellas. They need content. Having Nikki in there would be a high profile match. Because all I really care about now is that Asuka is in something of profile. That's all I want.
Yes.
I just I and then people were kind of coming at me with like suggestions. Somebody was like, Sonya Deville and Asuka would be great. And I'm like, it might be good, but. Sonya Deville is, so like for example, Nikki Bella is someone who's got a big TV show, a lot behind her, a big fan base. Sonya Deville is someone who's been on the roster for 18 months, has never beaten MD of any significance at any point. She also can't beat the three people that would help her get ready, which is Asuka, Charlotte, and Becky. So it would be a pre-show match. And anybody who thinks any different is I mean, I come on. If they said to you it's gonna be Asuka and Sonya Deville, would you not be thinking, yeah, it's pre-show?
It would be on the pre-show. It would
Yeah,
be.
100%.
And it's one of those things that would make me upset, because I don't want Asuka on the pre-show because that's ridiculous. Because Asuka's a very special talent. So I think for a lot of people who have been fans of Asuka and who, wanted to see her rise to prominence, like you and I talked about how happy we were that Becky Lynch tapped out clean to Asuka at Royal Rumble, because it really signified like Asuka's back. Like she is back, and she is back with a vengeance, and she's Asuka again, right? And now she's just gone. And it's one of those situations where they just have so many stories and so many things going on that I think Asuka's just kind of faded into the background by default. And I don't think it's necessarily them like not giving time to women. And I don't think it's, it doesn't anger me in the same ways as it would a couple years ago, because I mean, it's just one of those titles that isn't a priority right now. Like the United States title has disappeared from SmackDown as well. Like when's the last time we saw them do anything interesting that wasn't on a pre-show? Like it's just kind of gone into the ether. Is Nakamura the champion still? Is that a thing?
R-Truth.
R-Truth is the champion. That's right. That's the last time we saw the United States title. See, the fact that I had to ask is, and that I forgot that R-Truth beat Shinsuke Nakamura and Rusev in the same night, it's not a good sign, right? So like that title has been kind of relegated to pre-show or, purgatory, whatever. There just isn't time to devote to all of the titles and all of the stories. But like as a fan of Asuka, I'm worried that if she fades into the background and has a really lackluster championship reign, then it doesn't say a whole lot, and it doesn't say a whole lot for the SmackDown women's title itself that it's being treated as such an afterthought when it should be the main title. Like when Becky had that championship, it was the title on the show,
Do you think there's any, I mean, should they consider the women's title being over both brands? Or do you think
Only if the
that,
men's titles are over both brands.
I think the problem is the roster's not good enough for two women's belts right now.
Well, then build a better roster.
Look, I mean, because I'm trying to think, I don't know that many women that they've got that would be able to hang with like Charlotte and Becky and Ronda and Asuka. There's not
Well, there are
that,
a whole
Nick,
bunch of them.
in WWE right now.
In NXT, there are.
Right, so Shayna Baszler's one, but I mean, like ones who are ready right now.
I mean, Candace is going to start working SmackDown Live events, theoretically. I saw a rumor about that. I think Candace could definitely hang with them if you give her a good story and stuff. She's great. I'm trying to think who's all there right now, because a lot of people they have aren't even on TV, which is weird.
I
But
think that's the issue is that there's not a lot of people who are ready in all of the ways. Who are like characters that are built in, good
Rhea Ripley.
wrestlers. She's good, but again, she's NXT UK right now, so she's far from when they're gonna bring her up. So Shayna is really the only one, to me, in my eyes anyway, who is like Shayna could go up tomorrow and it'd be easy. But they need to figure something out. They need to figure something out because if you're gonna have like I mean on Raw you've got Becky, Charlotte, Ronda. Asuka, so Becky, Charlotte, Ronda, Nia, Alexa, you got Mickie James and people like that on the roster, Ruby Riott, who's a good wrestler. And then on SmackDown, it's like Asuka and
Yeah,
Asuka.
and Asuka, and
Like,
it's a problem.
so yeah, maybe they need to reproportion it or something.
But I mean, like, if they do have a lot of very talented wrestlers under contract, so it's one of those things where, like, Bianca Belair is not ready necessarily yet, but she could get there,
Because
like, fairly soon.
one of the points I was going to make is when I was watching when I was watching the main event of Raw and Becky and Charlotte and that kind of stuff, and I thought this company does not have ready to go another three or four women they could put in this slot in the next 6 months, and they need to start getting women ready for that. Like if you want to get women ready for the main events, then there is not a lot of people out there that are ready
Well, and you
or are
need to
near.
start like working to elevate people like Sasha and Bayley and Ruby and
Yeah.
Nikki and like those types of characters too. You need to stop treating them like afterthoughts, which is one of my criticisms of the tag team championship situation, the women's tag team championships, is like, I mean, we talked about it before, but a lot of people in those matches are people who just lose to people all the time. Like on SmackDown, we saw the triple threat deal, and Billie Kay and Peyton Royce won that match so that they get to enter last or something. I don't remember what the whole deal was. Oh no, it's that Sonya and Mandy now have to enter first in the elimination chamber because they lost the match. So, like, that's cool and all, but it's just like you have a bunch of people in this tag team situation who have been used basically as enhancement talent for so long that you don't think that they're on that level. Like, I would love to see people get more behind Sonya Deville as a singles wrestler. I would love to see her involved in stories and be elevated and rise. Like, I mean, we talked about Jay White earlier, right? Jay White being the champion in New Japan. The way that Jay White got to be the champion in New Japan is that they took someone who was newer and they booked him to the moon and they made him a valid character and they made him a main eventer. You can do that with other stars, but you have to actually do that and not beat them all the time.
I'm with you. Candice LeRae is a great example. Like, if you've never watched stuff outside WWE, right? And I'm not using that example to demean indie wrestling in any way, but you know, if you get 3 million people watching Raw, how many of those people have been to an indie show, right? Maybe not as many mm-hmm. as you would think.
Right.
If you've only watched WWE, where's the interest in Candice LeRae?
Yeah, she's just Johnny Gargano's wife.
Yeah, she's not like... So when she came out of the Rumble, it's like, yeah, that's cool for people who've been to shows in the West Coast when she's been doing all her stuff. But for me, it's like there needs to be more... There's a lot more needs to be done with her to have her ready to mix it up with people. So I hope that they... I mean, look, we're in the process of getting a WrestleMania main event featuring women, so it is definitely going in the right direction. But mm-hmm. I hope that they sort out the kind of below the main event scene for people that are ready to jump up. I mean, I think Shayna will be quite quick. She should be able to go fairly quickly.
Well, and it is frustrating when they bring up people like Nikki Cross, who is such a talented wrestler, and then they just have, like, that's why I have a problem with her losing to Ruby on Raw, not because I have a problem with her losing matches, but because she just feels like another part of the roster, you know? And when you bring someone new in like that, who is very talented and could take that ball and run with it, then why aren't you putting things behind them and making them feel like a big deal? Like, it's not the same situation as, like, when you bring Bo Dallas up from NXT and... You know, like, Bo Dallas was never going to be WWE champion. Nikki Cross could very well be SmackDown Women's Champion or Raw Women's Champion. Like, I would believe that because she is great as a performer. Like, it frustrates me that they brought these people up and then they're just kind of doing nothing when they had an opportunity to make it really special.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. Hopefully they fix it soon. Also on SmackDown, before we get to the Gauntlet match, you were a big fan of the Miz and Shane tag team that has melted your heart.
I love them.
We had the promo with the Usos. I thought it was pretty good.
I love this. This is exactly what I wanted. I wanted Uso and Miz and Shane promo battles. I want, like, I'm so invested in the Usos versus co-besties in the world, a duo with daddy issues. Like, I love this feud. I'm so glad it's the Usos going against them. I think the Usos are really great at these types of promos that they cut. And they're different to what anyone else on the roster is doing. And I don't know. I love it. And I kind of want Miz and Shane to always be friends and never break up, but I know that's never gonna happen. Like, I know that my heart's gonna be broken, but it's one of those baffling moments of magic where, yes, I'm actually invested in Miz and Shane McMahon, and Shane is apparently just not involved in all of the other authority drama. He's letting, you know, the cuntier members of the family take care of that.
So the big story of SmackDown was we knew we were gonna have the Gauntlet match of all six participants in the chamber match, but Mustafa Ali had an injury. We'll get to that. We've got a listener question about that actually after this. But one of the New Day were going to be put in there instead. It ends up being Kofi. And then Kofi has this amazing run of beating Daniel Bryan, beating Jeff Hardy, beating Samoa Joe. He lasts like an hour. And, you know, he's standing there with AJ shouting, what was it? I've waited too long. I've waited 11 years.
Like, I've waited 11 years for this. Like, fight me. Something like that.
And then he ends up getting tapped out to AJ. So it's funny. So I was watching this morning rather than last night. So I was watching it.
Did you have it spoiled for you, or were you spoiler free for it?
Spoiler free. But oh, I did, like, I was watching it and I'm going, and I just kind of, like, clicked how long the time's left. And AJ beats Kofi at like 44 minutes and 25 seconds. And the second part of the show lasts 45 minutes and 6 seconds. And I'm going, what?
It was right at 10. Right at 10.
So, and then, you know, look, my favorite Randy Orton is when he runs in, does an RKO, and leaves. So that was optimum Randy Orton, actually. But yeah, what did you make of the Gauntlet and the Kofi treatment, I guess?
The Gauntlet was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. I loved it. Yeah, like, maybe I would have preferred that Kofi not lose to AJ, but... Like, this was such a star-making performance for Kofi Kingston. He's been on the roster for a very long time, and that was kind of the story, right? Is like, okay, Kofi Kingston, part of the New Day, like, just kind of, you know, walking along, being in the New Day, eating some pancakes. The New Day are very much a comedy act right now, and not in a bad way. I mean, they're still a very prominent comedy act. They're still a very big part of the show, but they're not someone that you really take like seriously as like a singles main event wrestler style, right? Like they're always in the tag division, and it's always super fun, and they put on great matches. Any combination of the New Day are great. Kofi Kingston was absolutely the right choice for this. I wanted it to be Biggie Langston, like when they announced that it was going to be a member of the New Day, because Biggie Langston's kind of my favorite. But Kofi Kingston was absolutely the right choice. It was one of those situations where Daniel Bryan versus Kofi Kingston is not a match I thought I wanted. It was not something that ever crossed my mind. Obviously, it's been possible. I'm sure they've fought before, but once it was happening in front of me, Daniel Bryan versus Kofi Kingston was incredible and just showed that Kofi Kingston is such a phenomenal wrestler, not just in tag situations. Like he could be a singles main event guy. And it was really cool to see that because I hadn't really thought about Kofi Kingston in that way in a long time. Like I just remember the days when Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler fought forever and ever and ever over the Intercontinental title, and it just never seemed to end, right? I think they had like 100 matches or something against each other. It was crazy. But no, like Kofi Kingston kicked it up into a new gear. And when he pinned Daniel Bryan, I was shocked. I did not expect that. I thought this was going to be a situation where it was like, wow, he took Daniel Bryan to his limit. And that was really cool. And, you know, that was, you know, really great to see Kofi. Like, I feel like he was elevated by that. But then he pinned Daniel Bryan. Like he actually pinned the WWE champion, which sets up all sorts of story possibility for the future. And then for him to also pin Samoa Joe, for him to like go so far in this gauntlet was just incredible to me. I loved it. And I'm really, really bummed that it's not Mustafa Ali, because I think it would have been awesome to see Mustafa Ali get this position. And I think he would have killed it too. But for a guy like Kofi Kingston, who has been in the company for so long and who has been so loyal and has been, I mean, obviously rewarded for it in terms of like being the longest reigning tag team champion, and he's had plenty of accolades, but to see him kind of get a moment to shine, I think this is one of the most important nights of Kofi Kingston's career. And like when he finally tapped out to AJ Styles, no one can blame him. He was in the match for like a fucking hour, right? And he was wrestling his ass off. And like, I mean, Kofi versus Jeff Hardy, I don't really remember much about that because Jeff Hardy just, I don't know why, he just doesn't click for me, but it's fine.
And you
Like,
know, there's such an obvious solution. The
what?
Broken Hardys.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm aware of this. That would make a lot of sense. But yeah, I mean, Kofi Kingston was absolutely the star of SmackDown. And that's not something you expect to say. And so it's such a pleasant surprise to say, like, Kofi Kingston is the star of SmackDown. And, you know, for AJ Styles to tap out Kofi Kingston, I was a little bit annoyed just because I was like, why? Like, what is the. Do we really need to push AJ Styles more? Because I think maybe the story of Kofi Kingston kind of going and, you know, like being the final one that got RKO'd out of nowhere would have been kind of a cool story, especially with like Kofi and Randy having history, right? Didn't like Kofi beat Randy in an upset or something one time, and they were mad at each other. So I think that would have been kind of a cool story to tell. But I guess we're, you know, they're setting up Randy and AJ, so it makes sense that they did things the way they did. But yeah, I mean, it sets up potential feuds. I want to see Daniel Bryan versus Kofi Kingston at WrestleMania now. I really, really do. And that's a match that before last night's gauntlet on SmackDown would have seemed not WrestleMania worthy. It wouldn't have seemed like, you know, it would have maybe seemed like a little bit of a step down for Daniel Bryan. Not anymore. I think Kofi Kingston absolutely knocked it out of the park, and I was just so excited. I was so excited about everything about the gauntlet. And Randy Orton's such a prick, just coming in at the end and RKOing out of nowhere and, you know, beating AJ Styles. Because then you think like, oh, AJ Styles has, you know, finally beaten Kofi Kingston, and it seems like this really big deal. It's weird to say like AJ Styles beating Kofi Kingston felt like an accomplishment, but it kind of did in that night, you know, on the in the moment. And then, you know, for Randy Orton to ruin our fun is peak Randy Orton. So it's true to character.
You know, I thought it was great. I didn't expect to want Kofi Kingston in that position. I think Kofi and Bryan could be fun at WrestleMania. It's obviously not going to be like a top match, but I would rather see Kofi in there than any of the baby faces on SmackDown right now.
Yeah, same.
So and there's a good story that, you know, when Harper inevitably joins Rowan, you've got Bryan's faction and the New Day's faction for kind of shenanigans, which we know I
Which would be
love.
great. And the thing is, I like the idea that that this gauntlet proved, you know, you can take a member of the New Day and you can give them a singles run too. Like, it doesn't mean that the faction has to break up. It doesn't mean that Kofi needs to like turn on Xavier and Biggie Langston. It's you can have a faction who also has members who are prominent. Like, I mean, Jay White in the Bullet Club, like they are a faction, but he is, you know, the champion, right? And I would like to see that with the New Day, because I think that them going after singles titles as well is a more interesting story and a different story that we haven't seen with the New Day, because we've seen them do the same thing for so long at this point, like just having really top quality tag matches. But I think having the New Day kind of grow and change and shift is necessary at this point to keep them interesting. And having one of them go after a big singles title with the other two in their corner is a great story to tell too.
So we've got a few. I thought we could finish this off by doing something that we'll do every now and then. We do question time with the listeners, where Sandra tries to avoid fantasy booking. Pretty much a regular occurrence.
I will say I did like Samoa Joe acting like a dick in the match too. Like, I thought that he being so dastardly to Kofi like elevated Joe as well. Like, all of the boxes were ticked for me in
Yeah,
this
no,
gauntlet. I loved, loved, loved it.
it was perfect. I did not expect it to be like the Rollins Gauntlet match level of enjoyment, but it was literally just as good. Like, if not better, because it elevated something that you didn't expect.
I think it might be. I think I might prefer it to the Rollins one just because we already knew that Seth Rollins was so great. He needed rehabbing at that point, but Kofi Kingston was just such a surprise out of left field. I loved it.
Okay, so some of these, Ben from Texas is asking us, how does Becky get put into the main event? I don't know at all, but I'm looking forward to seeing what they do, and just hope it's exciting. I just want to see her attack Ric Flair at his birthday. Is that too much to ask?
I don't think that's too much to ask. I think the old man deserves it. And I think, for me, I feel like it's going to be Ronda demanding that Becky be put into the match. I think there are probably going to be some twists and turns and shenanigans and, you know, Ronda stepping up to the authority and that kind of stuff, which is going to be really interesting character dynamic for Ronda, because now it's the dynamic has shifted so that Ronda wants what we want again, you know, like whereas when it was Becky and Ronda, we didn't like Ronda and we liked Becky, but now we have to kind of be on Ronda's side because she wants Becky in the match. And I don't know, there's a lot of interesting layers and interplay to the story that I'm super, super into. But I think it's going to have to do with Rhonda demanding it and not wanting to face Charlotte Flair.
Will Levesque wants to know, what do you think will be the main event of TakeOver at WrestleMania weekend? Guessing Kenny will answer this, since Sandra hates fantasy booking. I actually have no idea what the main event is going to be, because Ciampa and Gargano feel like they're going to be together in some way, so I can't see them having a match that soon. But then, I don't know, maybe it's Ciampa and like Riddle, and then Gargano faces, I don't know, somebody in the mid card.
Well, when is Gargano facing Velveteen Dream?
I do not know. I have no idea. So
Yeah,
it's
because I'm wondering if that's going to happen on TV or if they're going to build that.
I think that'll be TV. If already building it now, and we're only in February,
Yeah, it's early days.
it feels like it would be too early. I think Ciampa will defend. I'll say Riddle, just for left field. Joe
Yeah, I
Nichols.
have no idea. I'm not even going to hazard a guess.
Joe
And let's
Nichols.
just put Shayna in the main event.
Joe Nicholson, who by his handle Joe Nicholson 95 means he was born in 1995. Kill me now. Do you think Mustafa Ali would have been booked in the same way Kofi was in the Gauntlet match, and could his injury be detrimental to a potential push for Ali?
I am nervous about the injury to Mustafa Ali. I think that I don't know if they would have booked him the same way as Kofi. This almost felt like kind of a reward for Kofi Kingston, but I think they very well could have booked him in the same way as Kofi Kingston and made a big fucking star out of Mustafa Ali. I mean, he's already had some killer matches bringing, you know, some of the top stars of SmackDown to their limit. And I really hope that this injury doesn't set him back. Like, I think I saw someone online compare it to Finn Balor, like when Finn Balor got injured after, you know, winning the Universal title and he was on top of the world, but he was injured. And it's taken Finn Balor a long time to kind of rise back to prominence. So I'm hoping Mustafa's not out for too long and that they can still do something with him, because before Kofi Kingston, you know, stole the hearts of the entire world, I was still kind of a fan of the idea of Mustafa Ali versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, even though it doesn't necessarily feel like the biggest match, but I think that there were ways to make it feel like a bigger match, and I think the Gauntlet match could have been that for Mustafa. I don't know. I really hope for good things for him because he's awesome, and I like the fact that they let him cut one of his Mustafa Ali style promos on SmackDown that shows that they still, you know, are behind him and want him to be featured in some sort of way. So I guess we can just cross our fingers that when he comes back, he will be okay.
Yeah, I think maybe if it was Ali, maybe he was just going to beat Brian and then that would be him out. But I feel like with Kofi, they've decided to do this kind of story, no matter how long it goes. We'll actually get more questions about Kofi. Andy's asking, Kofi Kingston, is this the beginning of a Biggie heel turn? No, you're trying to break up the New Day. I reject you.
I reject all notions of that. They are friends forever.
Michael Farrer wants to know, was Kofi's performance in SmackDown the start of a main event story for him? And more importantly, Sandra, why do you keep abandoning the Buddy Murphy train? I have no idea what that means.
Okay, so Michael and I have had this fight on Twitter about how he is questioning my loyalties to Buddy Murphy as champion because I cheered for Hideo Itami one time against Buddy Murphy, and also I cheered for Mustafa Ali against Buddy Murphy, and so he is questioning my loyalties to our beautiful Australian cruiserweight champion. And you know what? I can't help who my heart loves, and I can love more than one person, but I was devoted to the Dubstep Cowboys when no one else was devoted to the Dubstep Cowboys. So do not question my loyalty to Buddy Murphy. I've been a Buddy Murphy fan way longer than most people have. As far as Kofi in a main event, story, I hope so. Like, I hope that that's what they do. I would love to see Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. I don't know what that means for the rest of New Day, because I don't know if you just put Big E and Xavier in the Battle Royal then. Maybe unpopular, I wouldn't be mad about Xavier and Biggie Langston being in the Battle Royal instead of in another multi-team tag match that we've seen so many times. Not to say that they're not great, not to say that they don't, you know, deserve the prominence that they've gotten at WrestleMania's past, but it's, we've seen it so many times, and doing something different with the New Day, I think, would be helpful. So I don't know, like, I want to see it.
Couple more questions. Andrew Miller had asked about, you know, is Charlotte just in there so that Ronda can lose the title without being pinned? I don't think that's the case, but his follow-up's pretty interesting. Do we think there's a clause in Ronda's contract that she can't be beaten clean? I don't think there is. I think Ronda would be happy to lose whenever she needs to lose. I think it'll probably sting her a little bit because she's so used to real fighting where a loss is bad. But I don't think she would take a wrestling loss badly, do you?
I don't think she would take a wrestling loss badly because it doesn't speak to her ability or anything like that. You know, it's not a real loss. It's not like she would be, you know, like failing herself or whatever in any sort of real capacity. I would doubt that she would have that kind of clause in a contract. And I doubt WWE would let her have that kind of clause in a contract because she's going to have to lose eventually. So it, I mean, when the story is right, I don't think Ronda Rousey should be losing regularly. I don't think that she should just be another person on the roster. But when the story is right, I think that her losing would make a lot of sense. And I feel like she would do it. As far as like Charlotte being in the match just so that Becky doesn't pin Ronda clean, like, I don't know which one Becky's going to beat. And that's part of the intrigue of the story.
Last question from Alex, Alex S on Twitter. When's the next podcast with Drunk Kenny and Drunk Sandra?
I mean, I'm sure we're probably going to do at least one of those at WrestleMania.
Probably.
Chances are, knowing us.
But yeah, that's pretty much it for us this week. Next week, obviously, on Monday, we will be doing an Elimination Chamber review on Patreon. Next Wednesday, we'll be back with all the news and all the stuff that's going on. If you are interested in us talking about certain things, like, message us on like a Tuesday/Wednesday and say, hey, can you guys talk about this? And if we've seen it or are able to, then we will. But also, I'll be recording the PowerSlam podcast with Finn tomorrow. We're going to be talking a little bit about Pedro Morales because he knows a bit more about him than I do since he passed away. Check out our new interview cast where I've interviewed Keith Elliott Greenberg, Nick Aldis, the NWA champion, and Justin Roberts. So that's a new thing every Monday that's going up. We're now on Spotify. You can search us on there. Sandra helped set that up, which is good.
It is a good thing. I also want to give a quick shout out to 205 Live, mm-hmm. which I know a lot of people do not watch, but it was very good this week. And like particularly the street fight, no disqualification. I don't know what they were calling it. I think it was no disqualification match between Tony Nese and Noam Dar in the main event was fantastic. And I really, really enjoyed it. It's worth checking out if you don't normally watch 205 Live, if it's not something that normally grips you. I think this match is worth going out of your way to see because they just put on an absolute war, and I thought it was great. Also, Drew Gulak was on commentary for the first match, and after Jack Gallagher won, Jack Gallagher ran into Drew Gulak's arms. Drew said, "Ground-based offense, yes," and then kissed Jack Gallagher on the cheek, and it was the cutest thing ever.
It's nice to see Noam Dar getting some time to do something good. So
Yeah.
there you go. What are the plugs, Sandra?
You can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Tons of bonus content going up all the time. We have St. Valentine's Day Massacre 1999 up there now. We have, obviously Elimination Chamber reviews coming, bonus content with Kenny and Finn for Power Slam, all sorts of good stuff over on Patreon. Helps us actually do this show so that we can be able to do it. And so I don't have to, be working all the time. I can actually have this as a job, so I appreciate it. Thank you. Go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content, and insidetheropes.co.uk/Goldust for tickets to an evening with Goldust at the beginning of March.
There you go. You can also check out our YouTube channel with Jesse the Body Ventura interviews up there. Parts 1 and 2 are now up, so go check that out. Talking about different parts of his career. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. And to play us out will be who, Sandra? Somebody new that we've not. Oh, no! The New Day! Because it was Kofi Kingston's time.
Yeah, let's do New Day. I was going to say Charlotte, but no, fuck Charlotte. Kofi Kingston all the way.
Here is Kofi Kingston. We will see you next week. And enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the chamber, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
It's a new day. Yes, it is. Stop till you reach the top, and while them haters keep hating, you'll be winning a race.